July the 12th. As the German air attacks on Great Britain continue, it is reported this morning that the naval and air battle that started between British and Italian forces in the Mediterranean early this week is still in progress. Possibly we shall hear more on this in a few minutes when Cecil Brown reports from Rome. Regarding the air raids over Britain, the Nazi raiders are now said to be sweeping over the Channel on virtually an around-the-clock basis. But now the news direct is reported by CBS correspondents abroad. First, Edwin Hartridge reporting from Berlin.
Marshal Pétain made another radio address to the French people yesterday. He devoted a good bit of his time to bitterly criticizing England for the British attack of the French naval squadron at Oran. He also appealed to the French people for support of the new government and the constitution that was in the process of formation at Vichy. He said that the war had resulted in the collapse of both international capitalism and international socialism. And now France was free, said the 82-year-old soldier, from old ties and alliances, and could go to work and on the problem of reconstructing France. The National Assembly, consisting of the French Chamber of Deputies and the Senate, cast 569 votes, or a majority of 80, for a new dictatorial power to be handed to Marshal Pétain. According to the Blum paper, Local Anzeiger, Pierre Laval ran a show in the Assembly. Many familiar faces were present. Paul Reynaud, Norman Blum, Edouard Herriot, and other former cabinet leaders and ministers. At one point in the proceedings, the deputy, according to the Berlin papers, attempted to start a debate accusing Reynaud and Dreyfus of being two of the leading, quote, warmongers, unquote. However, Laval hyped up the debaters to a vote. The rapid swing of France towards a totalitarian state is still the object of cynical or doubting interest in Berlin, at least judging by the editorial comments. Local Anzeiger, commenting on the Vichy proceedings, has this to say, quote, all the responsibility was given to Marshal Pétain by the parliamentarians who did not want to carry any responsibility themselves. The alleged unity among the members of the National Assembly at Vichy was in reality a mass flight of bankrupt politicians. Nobody seriously believes in the masquerade at Vichy. The old France is legally dead, but the new France is still to appear. End of quote. The other papers make similar comments. For instance, the Pope should be about to state, quote, we will not forget the speakers at Vichy are the same men who at Trianon, Versailles, Saint-Germain, and Neuilly treaty conferences tore up the old map of Europe and created new artificial blocks of states such as the Little Entente, end quote. The Illustrated magazine has just appeared with a special supplement entitled The Guilt of France. It is a series of stories attempting to show the historical enmity France has to Germany and how its politicians have always attempted to subjugate its neighbor to the east. And interlarded in its pages are long accounts of reported French brutalities and their occupation of the Rhineland. So the press campaign against France has been resumed. Driving France into a totalitarian form of government. This campaign seems to mean that Germany is giving a cold shoulder to the Vichy government in its wholesale political reorganization. The governor of the province of Munster has issued an order requiring all school children in the upper grades to listen to the noontime news broadcast of the German radio stations. Explaining his order, the governor said that the German youth must be eyewitnesses to the historic events that are now taking place. And there's an announcement in the papers this morning that 12 schools will be established throughout the German Reich to train young girls to...
...überlegen hat, das Nationalsozialistische Deutschland.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to transmission difficulties, there has been an interruption to the broadcast from Berlin by Columbia's correspondent, Edward Hartridge. In just a moment, we continue our broadcast by taking you to London for the report of Edward R. Murrow. Meantime, here's a dispatch from British East Africa. A communique disclosed today that heavy Italian forces, including artillery, had been attacking the British post at Moyal on the Ethiopian frontier since dawn Wednesday. The Italians had fired more than 1,000 shells into the post, the communique said, but British casualties had been comparatively light. In an uncensored dispatch from Tokyo, the United Press says Russia is mustering every ounce of her vast resources from Siberia to the Baltic to bring her military power to maximum strength in the next 2 months. She She is moving on all fronts to strengthen her strategic position against the day when Germany may look to the east. That day, many observers in Russia believe, will come when and if Great Britain is knocked out of the war. Now return to Europe for more news reported from the British capital by Edward R. Murrow. Go ahead, London.
This is London. Germany has intensified her attacks on British shipping in the Channel with speedy short-range dive bombers and torpedo-carrying seaplanes, in addition to high-altitude bombers. The Air Ministry announces that 22 enemy aircraft, 13 bombers, a seaplane, and 8 of their fighter escorts were destroyed in operations around the British coast yesterday. Many other German planes were thought to be severely damaged. Only 4 British fighters were shot down. Despite these losses, some 64 planes in 6 days, another large formation of German bombers was over England during the night. A number of bombs were dropped and a hit scored on a huge gas tank. One district on the east coast was raided 4 times in 1 day. Civilian casualties are said to be few. Again this morning, German raiders attempted to fly inland in southeast England. They turned back several times when British fighters were sighted. Heavy explosions coming from the French coast near Boulogne shook the ground on the British side of the Channel last night. German searchlights were in action, as well as pom-pom and anti-aircraft fire. Apparently, the Royal Air Force was again dumping its heavy bomb loads on German-occupied territory. We have no news of any losses of British bombers. Britain has a new ally in this war. Haile Selassie, former emperor of Abyssinia, has been assured of Abyssinia's independence when the war is won by Britain. This fact emerged from a reply by the Foreign Undersecretary in the House of Commons. British and Abyssinian forces will coordinate their activities against the Italians. Today, the Ministry of Information launches its Sealed Lips campaign. Press, posters, and radio urge everyone to join Britain's silent column. Citizens are told that the government tells them the truth, that they shouldn't listen to rumors or pass them on, shouldn't discuss troop movements, the location of factories or aerodromes, never pass on information about the location or extent of air raid damage, shouldn't discuss or discuss and pass on enemy broadcasts. This new campaign is none too well received by the press. The Daily Herald advocates a candid column. The best way to kill rumor and gossip, it says, is to tell the public as much as possible of the truth about the war. The Daily Mail advises the Minister of Information that if he is to kill rumor, he must put something in its place. He must give the people the facts. Mr. Duff Cooper has said that the question of, quote, an improved censorship, unquote, is still undecided. At the same time, he has promised that there is no intention to interfere with the expression of opinion. But the Daily Mail points out that you can't express opinion on the news if the news itself is suppressed. Another campaign on the home front launched today is the drive to produce more food. Government scientists have worked out a minimum iron ration of homegrown food, and the farms of Britain must produce this ration, if necessary, under direct orders of the government. The Minister of Agriculture said last night, tens of millions of people on the continent of Europe will soon face the danger of starvation. Many millions may well perish. Mr. Hudson said that Britain had adequate reserves of food, but must look forward to the winter in the next year. His forecast of famine in Europe indicated that, in his opinion, civilian suffering in Europe has hardly started. His speech reminded me of a line in a play. This is only putting your little finger in cold water. Wait. You may yet have to put your head in fire. The prediction this morning is that the government scheme for the evacuation of children from Britain to the Dominions in the United States has been postponed indefinitely. It is expected that an official announcement to this effect will be made in the House of Commons next week. Shipping difficulties and dangers of the sea voyage are said to have influenced the cabinet's decision. If the scheme is canceled, as predicted, there will be bitter disappointment in many British homes. We are told that the American Committee is proceeding with its plans to provide American hospitality for British children. I'm indebted to an English publication for reminding me of the lines inscribed on the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor. The statue, you will remember, faces toward Europe, and the inscription reads, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me." It might be well to remember that not all of the homeless, cold and hungry in Europe next winter will be found in Britain. I return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Edward R. Murrow reporting from London. Now we take you to the Italian capital for the report of Cecil Brown. Go ahead, Rome.
Hello, CBS. Mr. Brown is unable to talk this morning. So we return you to CBS in New York.
Standing by here in New York is Linton Wells now to give you his analysis of recent developments. Mr. Wells.
It now seems to be quite definitely established that insofar as Hungarian and Bulgarian territorial claims against Romania are concerned, no further action is to be taken until Hitler and Mussolini, particularly the former, give the word. Still in all, while relative peace is expected, you can never tell about the age-old powder magazine, which is the Balkans. The most trivial incident may be the spark which will explode it, despite the best efforts of Hitler and Mussolini to maintain the status quo in that region, while they get on with the more important task of bringing England to her knees. When and where the Nazis will launch their long-expected attempt to invade the British Isles is not, of course, known. But Britain claims to have completed all plans to meet it. The weak link in England's armor is ERA, which has refused to join England in the war against Germany and insists upon maintaining a state of neutrality. The British say they intend to respect ERA's neutrality until the Germans attempt to violate it by an invasion aimed at a backdoor attack against Britain. Such a Nazi move seems to be inevitable, and equally inevitable would seem to be the collaboration with the Germans of those rebellious Irishmen who hate England more than they do Germany. Then it may be too late for England to do anything about it. Despite all that has happened, the British government still appears to be reluctant to abandon scruples when dealing with an unscrupulous enemy. While the British Isles are left to the mercy of the Nazis, the Italians are to throw their might against Britain's Mediterranean fleet and African possessions. This plan of operation was agreed upon during the recent conference between Hitler and Ciano, according to Virginio Gaeta's editorials. As a consequence, Italian air raids on the island of Malta, and the British Navy and Britain's African colonies are reported to be increasing in intensity, although no real damage seems to be resulting. Among other Italian-African goals is control of Suez and the Red Sea. If successful, this would cut off the British lifeline to the east and enable Mussolini to support his large forces in East Africa. It would also have the effect of bottling up a part of the British naval and land forces in the Near East and jeopardize the security of British oil supplies from the Mosul fields. Until now, the Italian efforts in North Africa have been rather half-hearted because it was hoped to keep Egypt from formally entering the war on the side of Britain. Now the Italians have started regular bombardments of the great Mediterranean port of Alexandria, where much of the British fleet has been concentrated, along with some immobilized French warships. And recently, the Italians moved into the Anglo-Egyptian Sudan and captured the rail junction point of Kassala on the Eritrean frontier. By all the rules, these actions should bring forth an Egyptian declaration of war against Italy, but as none seems to be in the offing, it would appear that the Egyptians are not as enthusiastic about joining Britain as they should be, and that spells trouble for the British. I happen to be rather familiar with East Africa. I was in Kenya last August, in Uganda, the Sudan, and Egypt in September, in Ethiopia, Aden, the Somalilands 4 years ago. And unless the British have materially improved their defenses in that part of the world during the last 10 months, which is doubtful, except in the matter of land forces, a concentrated air effort by the Italians may quite likely meet with considerable success, more particularly now that the British can no longer rely upon support from French Somaliland, which guards the entrance to the Red Sea and Aden, and also protects British Somaliland. From their great Eritrean Red Sea bases at Assab, Massawa, and Asmara, the Italians have been and can continue raiding British bases in the Sudan, Uganda, Aden, and British Somaliland. From bases in Italian Somaliland and Ethiopia, they can continue to strike at Kenya and Tanganyika to the south and west, and also to the north and east against Aden and British Somaliland. And I doubt if in opposition, the British and South African Air Forces combined have been able to throw in more than 600 planes.
And with this analysis by Linton Wells, we conclude this morning's report on European developments. We had hoped to present the latest news from Rome, but were advised that Mr. Brown was not available. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.